is a Pinball News production.
Thanks, everybody, for coming. My name is Brett Davis. I am the designer of all the PinScore products that Marco Specialties and other distributors carry. I put together a little presentation kind of leading into some new product introductions that we have to describe a little bit about what this journey has been about. So I titled it Pinball Power Electronics, an Exercise in Forensic Engineering, because that's exactly what it is when you go back and look at what was done years ago, try to understand it, then try to develop a product to replace it. So I'd like to start with a bit of history, a little bit of trivia. You know, in 1976, that's when we started seeing a lot of development going on amongst the major pinball manufacturers at that time, Williams, Bally, Gottlieb, Stern. There was this kind of almost like an arms race to see who can develop and release the first commercial. When I say commercial, coin-op solid-state pinball machine. Solid-state meaning that it's based off electronics, transistors, logic chips. And so it so happened that Bally was the first. They released a pinball machine, solid-state, in 1976, just before, you know, the turn of the year. So I have a Tilt DVD here as a giveaway. If you guys, if someone can name which was that, what's the name of the first pinball?
Bow and arrow.
Nope.
Oh. Eight ball?
Nope.
Captain America.
Nope.
Captain Fantastic.
Nope, it wasn't that one either.
Sure to 76.
Wasn't that one. It does have a something to do with the fact that it was a bicentennial year.
No. 1776?
No. No. Let's see. There's actually one out there on the floor right now.
Well, there's also hundreds of machines.
Yeah, I know, but there's this particular title is out there. No. Freedom. Who had the Freedom?
What about the 37? Micro. Did Micro make the first
Micro, whatever it's called. Micro.
What's that?
3076 Micro is considered the first solid-state.
But it wasn't released as a commercial product in coin-op industry.
I think it was, but it just wasn't successful because it kind of sucked.
Well, if that was the case, then I stand corrected. But I was looking for the title Freedom.
So, I'm sorry, excuse my ignorance, but what about the machine was solid-state?
On Freedom?
Yeah.
Solid-state, the control boards were using a microprocessor. Okay. They were using transistors. They were not using tubes. They weren't using relays. You'll see over, if you think about all the games over on the far side of the wall or on that side of the floor, those are all electromechanical games. They were controlled by motors, by relays, by switches. There wasn't any transistors. There weren't any vacuum tubes. It was just a bunch of wire, and it's all considered relay logic and switches. I'll have to look up that other title. I'll talk to you later. You said Spirit of 76. But to go on, a little bit more about the late 70s technologies that they had. Most of the commercial electronics that were being produced at that time were based on either 5-volt DC or 12-volt DC logic. And the component variety, as you can imagine, was not that great. You didn't see, you know, nowadays you have transistors, you know, we have companies making literally thousands and thousands and thousands of different types of transistors and logic chips. But back then, there were very few companies that were really mass producing any of these solid-state devices in quantity. Also, surface mount technology, and that is where you're actually soldering, the components themselves are placed on the surface of the printed circuit board rather than going through the circuit board with leads. It's still in its infancy, and really wasn't commercially viable to utilize those components for any of their products. So one of the things is that I started looking back and say, you know, thinking what I needed to do. One of the first things I always do when I look back at the products is to try to understand what was going through those engineers' minds when they were designing. I mean, why did they do what they did? Was there a reason? The numbers, was it because of the voltages? Was it because of currents required? Control circuits? Why did they do it? Once you understand those things, it opens up the way for new ideas, new methods, and new features to make those old products work better and add those special features that will make them even more desirable to use. Maybe it's some test additional test points. Maybe it's a little bit more current limiting. Maybe it's just a little bit more structure in there for protection mechanisms on the circuits themselves. And one of the key areas was in the 5-volt circuit. As I mentioned before, back then, a lot of the logic was based off just standard 5-volt DC logic. Some of it was 12-volt. But in the typical power supply design, and this is where I'm leading into because I am going to be talking about some of the new PinScore products in power supplies, this is a typical circuit used in many of the pinball machines in those late 70s and going into the 80s and even more, you know, further on of a 5-volt circuit. We have a little bit of diode rectification here. We have a big capacitor. And right here, this is a linear regulator. Oftentimes with these big old linear regulators, you also have big heat sinks. Lots of heat generated off those. And in electronics, heat is not good. You don't want to be heating everything up. So you have to start looking at, you know, what other things were happening in the circuit and how much current was being drawn to require such a heat sink. One of the most common misconceptions about these 5-volt circuits and the regulators and the technology that they were using back then is that these circuits, they said that they were using ICs that said they were 3 amps. So you think, well, it's a 3-amp circuit. That's how much 5 volts is. We're always going to see 3 amps. And so you go back and think, well, I have to design a 3-amp 5-volt regulator if I'm going to replace this. Well, one of the big misconceptions was that it provided 3 amps. It did not provide 3 amps. And apologize if I get too technical. That's an engineer in me. So what did it actually do? The key is going back into the data sheets on the component, and we can see that with those 3-amp regulators, they always had these big, massive chunks of aluminum, these big heat sinks. And those heat sinks had to dissipate heat. Well, why was it dissipating so much heat? As we go through the data sheets, we start seeing what we have as far as efficiencies as well as power requirements that they were thinking of. And an efficiency calculation is basically you're trying to see how much power you're going to get out compared to how much power you put into it. And whatever the difference was, that's your losses. So that's your decrease in efficiency. One of the things I was discovering is that creating these circuits with the 3-amp thought for, that was the case. But when you measure everything out, measure the voltages, I started getting a better feel for what was actually happening. I was only seeing about 2.5 amps out of those regulators, not 3 amps. When you start doing the calculations, you then start understanding where you need to have, why you had the large heat sinks. Now, they still manufacture the heat sinks that are on those boards right now. And they actually are corresponding to the same part numbers that they did 20 years ago. And what we see is that from a power dissipation standpoint, these curves, that the heat we were seeing was what they could deal with. And once you do all the numbers, you start seeing that, you know, yeah, you have these decreases going on. You got this heat generation, but you got to deal with the fact that it was trying to provide 3 amps. That's what they were designing to get to 3 amps, but they never were achieving it. And so we were seeing all these losses. So we needed to do something a little bit better. If they say they want 3 amps, let's give them 3 amps. So I found out that the 3-amp linear regulators really were not providing the 3 amps. Temperature was playing a big part of it. We were seeing a lot of heat in the back boxes. I don't know if you've ever, for those of you who have pinball machines, you see, you know that those back, you know, the back boxes get hot. You get a lot of heat off those heat sinks. Common knowledge for those working on pins is that that the linear regulators and the capacitors will go bad sometime, and they will need to be replaced. And there are also similar issues that I was finding in all the other circuits of the design. So I started taking a little bit different approach. And one of the things that drives PinScore, myself in designing all the products is that I want to keep providing solutions to keep the games running. We're here because we're here going to the show because we like playing pinball. We like the games. We like the hobby. I want to make sure the games continue to run. And whereas I've been working primarily on displays for showing displays for the last couple of years, I started developing some power supply solutions as well. So my basic criteria for designing a power supply is that, one, I need to make sure that my current availability is there. It's not affected by temperature. It's not going to give off a lot of heat. But I wanted to make sure that it can handle the increased 5-volt loads that are starting to creep into the pinball machines based upon the continued use of LED bulbs, the LED displays, and as we start seeing more and more aftermarket boards continue to come on the market, some of the new MPU boards that are being developed, replacement MPU boards, they're a little bit heavier they have a little bit heavier requirement for 5 volts. And we need to make sure that power supplies can handle that. I know from experience in replacing my own power supplies that as I have done so, it was because I wasn't providing enough. All my pins have currently at home, they have my own displays in it. I am putting LED bulbs in there. I am seeing a lot of the changes. I'm seeing some of the aftermarket boards. And my 5 volt kept on dropping lower. And start getting into those brownout areas. So I wanted to make sure I did that. I want to reduce the heat in the head. Those heat sinks, that's what they're called, heat sinks. They put out a lot of heat as the game is being played. Another area is that I wanted to make sure that the power supply, the 5-volt system, could take a direct short across the outputs and not destroy itself. That it'd be able to recover so we can find out what was the real cause of the 5-volt short. I wanted additional debug features. One of the frustrating things I had dealing with a lot of the power supplies is some of the documentation, the test points were not easily accessible. I couldn't really get decent measurements. I just had to work a little bit too hard to get some of the stuff I wanted. So I wanted to have some additional debug features. But as I said, I also wanted to make sure they could handle the LED displays and also take advantage of for additional look ahead and where the games were going. A typical switching power supply, as seen here, there's a lot of people that would use this device. And this is a very common device. It's very common amongst industry. It's used in the automotive industry. But it has its purposes. And I looked very closely at this design as a possible source because it was so popular. Price was right. Very cheap. You could spend less than a dollar on this device. But there's a whole bunch of external factors that had to be kept in mind. Low cost, yes. It's what we call a single switch design because we have this single transistor right here that's providing the switching characteristics for the switch supply. Efficiency, it's about 80%. Not bad, not the greatest because there are more efficient devices out there. But there's a few reasons why I chose not to use this, and I'm going to give you the biggest one right here. According to the data sheet, the maximum short circuit current this thing can handle is 8 amps without destroying itself. That's the maximum. But if you do the math, 8 amps on that 5-volt output, for a 5-volt output, that's still 40 watts, but it's still a lot of current. With that particular device, you go backwards in the math, and you'll find that that device on the input would be drawing about 4 amps or a little bit less. And unless it was properly fused, you would blow out your controller before you would blow out the fuse. That really is not conducive to proper design, especially when you're dealing with circuits and you're trying to make a universal type of system like I've attempted to do, where I want to be able to use this as many games as possible. In system 3 through 7 games, they had 4 amp fuses on the input, on the 12 volt inputs going into the regulators. On system 9 through 11s, they used a 7 amp fuse. So definitely the controller would go before. Now, yes, we could go ahead and rephrase and say we want to put different fuses in there to make sure that the fuses would go before the controller. But it's been our experience that the customer, they're going to always have their manual there. And they're going to be looking at that manual, and they're going to see, okay, I need they're not going to see, they don't keep their original documentation for a replacement board, a lot of cases. And so what fuse do I need? And the fuses that I'd want to put in there would not be common values in some cases to kind of clean things up. So I wanted to take still a different approach. So I chose not to use it. So my solution is simple. I have this little device here, right there. Now that little external switching regulator, it's fully integrated. It's 5 volts, can provide up to 6 amps, peak at 8 amps for short periods of time if necessary. Also, it has built-in short circuit protection. It will take up to a 40 amp short across my output, and all I have to do is power cycle the board, and the system will come right back up. So it's a very solid device. Also, it's also widely used in the telecom industry. I mean, and we all know how popular telecom is. So I've getting a really good low-cost component here. And it's so small. I actually have these over at our booth, over the Marco Specialties booth right now. You can actually see these boards that I'm going to be talking about. On top of that, there's also a very low power dissipation, 1.5 watts at 3 amp on a 3 amp load. That's less than any light bulb that we currently put in our game. So it's very, you know, we do not have the heat generation in those back boxes through this regulation system. Efficiency of this regulator is 93%. So it's actually lower power consuming for overall the system. And that's what one of the big things that we've been seeing and hearing from our customers. They say, how can we reduce the power consumption of the pins? Who can tell me what the average pinball states that a solid-state pinball machine says they draw out of the AC outlet?
8 amps.
Yeah. I actually put one of my power supplies in my Road Kings, and I actually was drawing 6 amps. Part of it's because of the efficiency. Part of it is also because I also changed over some of the LED, a lot of my incandescents to LEDs. That was a big plus. And I'll tell you the reason why I did that in a minute. But bringing the power down, the heat now is significantly reduced in my back box. I mean, it's actually cooler, significantly cooler by about 15, 20 degrees in my back box. So there's a lot of pluses there. When I talked about wanting to have an optional high voltage, well, that's what I did. I chose to create a high voltage module. Now, over here, on this chart here, I didn't have a picture. This device right here is a plug-in high voltage module. Why would we do that? We found through talking to our customers, of people who purchase pin scores, the reason why they were purchasing pin score displays, 60% of them were saying is because their high voltage system was gone. And so they couldn't see a need for that. And so we've decided, well, let's make a high voltage optional. So we made this so that we can each plug and play. I would have had a better picture than what I have here as far as assembly drawing. But this is just to show you that we've created that as an option. That was one of the guiding points that I had for the design of the products. Also, debug. Yeah, LEDs indicating for other voltages, simple enough to put in. We have, and easy enough to measure from test points, clearly labeled, easy enough to deal with. Makes it really nice. Also, one of the big key features that we put into the power supply systems was what we're calling DCGI. The general illumination circuit in voltages that they've been using for years has been 6.3 volt AC. So it's an AC signal. AC and LEDs, yeah, they'll work, but only half the time because of the nature of an LED. So you'd be getting these strobing effects in a traditional LED bulb. So we looked at this and said, you know, more and more people are coming out with, you know, doing LED bulbs. They want to do these, put LEDs because they're less current drawing. A standard incandescent 47 bulb will draw 150 milliamps. Well, an LED will typically draw between 20 and 30 milliamps. So you have a lower power consuming device here, but you still get that illumination. Now, I don't know if anybody's gone over and taken a look at CoinTaker's LEDs. They have some great LED bulbs. So what I have done is that I'm trying to incorporate the thought to looking ahead. So I created this DCGI system. I essentially converted that 6.3 volt AC to a DC level, and through this circuit right here, I'm controlling how long that DC is on for those GI circuits. It's called pulse width modulation. And so we can control how long it's on. And with that comes the benefit is that I've put an adjustable potentiometer on there, dial in, so I can brighten them up or turn them down so that they're barely on. So I can control that brightness, which in turn, if you're using incandescent bulbs, it lengthens the life, you know, lengthens the lifespan of those incandescents. In the LED, it's not an issue because I'm just pulse width modulating a DC level now on those LEDs. So they are going to be operating the way they should be operating. And you eliminate the strobing effect that you will often see in games that don't have a similar system if they're having it on the GI bulbs. The voltage out on this circuit for the GI, I'm still sitting at 6.3 volt DC. Still sitting about in an average 6.3 volt DC. These are some high power FET switches. I had to keep that in mind because if I'm using incandescent bulbs, I still have that 150 milliamps per bulb that I had to take into account. So these FET devices are all capable of handling, up to 6 amps. But in most of the Williams power or Williams designs or games from these era, from System 3 through System 11B, they have 5 amp fuses in each of the GI circuits. So we'll have that in place so it'll last surprisingly long. And you're not going to get the heat still across these devices because of the nature of a FET switch. There's very low resistance when it's turned on. There's only in terms of milliohms how much resistance is there, and that's what you get where you get your heat. That's why a lot of times your transistors, like your TIP 122s and your TIP 102s, they have heat sinks oftentimes on them. They have the tabs. They will get hot because you have a much larger voltage drop because you have a much larger resistance in between the collector to the emitter of the device. And that's where all that heat, because you have that voltage drop across there and you're still pulling that kind of current through there. Yes?
Does this DC-based general illumination still take a control signal from the CPU so it can...
Yes, it does.
Or turn it off completely?
Yes. You're probably thinking in terms of the WPC era where the MPU actually had that. I'm currently working on a WPC power driver board design, which is incorporating this same circuitry and the same design technology, and it will work in conjunction with the MPU-controlled brightness controls that they already have. It becomes more of an additive effect at that point. Right now, we have power supply systems designed for all the Williams games from 3 through System 3 through 11B, 11C. We have a couple, you know, variety of products associated with that. One of the things about System 11C games was that they didn't run the GI circuit through the power supply board. So in order to provide a solution, a DCGI solution for System 11C games, I went ahead and created a subboard that would be mounted right inside the cabinet next to the transformer. The GI voltage is separated through a connector. You can just plug in the board, and I have the adjustment potentiometer on a cable that you can just put right inside the coin door. And that way you can, you know, you don't even have to open up the back box. And as well as on the power supply, on the earlier, this board right here, which is for your System 3 through System 11B games, I have the ability for another remote potentiometer to still drop it down through the cabinet and mount it up by the coin door rather than adjusting it behind the glass. So, yeah, it's going to be a short presentation. But just wanting to summarize, the old, you know, we know that the old power supplies will fail. It doesn't matter if they will fail, they will fail. It's just a matter of when. When's it going to happen? I believe innovation is still possible around these old games. We see that with the number of people out there generating new designs, replacement parts for these games. And those individuals are to be commended, you know, simply because they have a passion for the game and they want to keep these things living, and alive and playable and usable for future generations. And I'm committed, as far as the designer of the PinScore products, to make this happen. It's what I want to do. It's a lot of fun. So at this moment, does anybody have any questions? Yes, another question.
You're still using fuses. Why do you use fuses in brackets to recessable circuit breakers?
Big part of it is cost. A fuse. A fuse only costs when you actually buy them. I pay about 15 cents a piece for a fuse. A resettable fuse or a circuit breaker, you're spending a little bit more money into that. For the number of fuses that there are, it still isn't cost effective to put those in. I had seriously considered putting in into some resettable fuses into some of the designs. There's usually, though, about anywhere from a 5 to 10 minute reset time, because it isn't a matter of pushing a button like we have on our circuit breakers in our homes. It takes time to cool off because it's actually thermal. And when it gets too hot, it pops, essentially, well, virtually pops. And then basically you have to wait until it resets itself before you can use it again. Hopefully at that time you will have gotten an idea as to what caused it to pop in the beginning with, and you can go investigate it. But fuses are still going to be cheaper in the long run. Any other questions? Sure.
What's your availability of pricing?
Availability. We actually have these right here ready for you right now. These are the System 11Cs. We'll have and this is what we call a PS12246. Basically, it's based upon the original Williams part number for those games for the power supply. This was an incorrect part number that they put in when they made the flyer. This is our PJ8345, also based upon the original part number. The difference is that in the Williams System 3 through 6, they use the C7999 board. Well, this board has the mounting holes and it's pin for pin compatible with those early boards. Now, there's a lot of extra stuff here on that board. And some of it is used, some of it isn't used in the early games. One of the things is that with the System 3 games, they did not have, well, 3 through 6, they didn't run the GI through the power supply board to begin with. So I created an additional adapter board that you could, a user with our instructions, will be able to put this in their game, mount it up, plug it in, and they'll be able to take advantage of the DCGI system for those early Williams games. So essentially it's going to be almost like converting it over to a later model. The high voltage supply is also ready and available right now. We have them in limited quantity. We're going to have our production got a little bit behind, and so we have more production coming in. So, I mean, we will have all of this right now readily available to a certain extent within the next week. The 8345s will be ready next week, so we'll have that. You can order them now, and as soon as they're in, they'll start shipping them out, if you so desire. Price tag for the 12246, I believe, was set for about $79. And the 8345 was going to be sitting around $89 to $99. Now, Mark Mantletort of Marco Specialties, he's actually working out pricing arrangements so that if you purchase the pin score with the power supply, you get a price reduction, because one of it would be, you wouldn't be purchasing the high voltage display, high voltage module. No need to have it. And the high voltage modules will always be available aftermarket, you know, for a purchase separately if you wanted to purchase it separately. Any other questions?
After tackle power supplies, what other boards are you looking at?
Actually, we have a prototype dot matrix LED display at the booth right now. I am continuing designs with and replacement designs for Gottlieb System 1 and System 80 power supply boards. One of my, as I said, I'm working on a WPC power driver board right now. I made it through a couple layers, the levels of prototyping. It's now, I'm looking for those really odd games that for some reason something changed when they were being produced that caused something else to happen. So I found a few issues with those games that I'm trying to understand and fix. I'm also working on looking at the Bali, or early Bali Stern games, focusing on a complete replacement for the transformer and rectifier assembly to clean up those power supplies and actually eliminate the transformer, because that is a big heat source right there. And with that, go along with I may tackle, it makes sense at that point when I'm doing that, to also look at a very innovative design for the lamp driver board to support LEDs, because the current lamp driver board design in Bali does not support LEDs at all for LED light bulbs. And so there have to be some significant changes made there to allow to support either or both incandescents and LEDs. So if you hang out in Texas, you might see some more prototypes. That's what I'm targeting for, you know, February. I mean, March at the Texas show. Maybe even the Myrtle Beach show. There's one in February, too. So, any other questions? Thank you for your time.